it's the Angry GM. It's a proofread aloud. It's a trap. That's the title of the article, by the way. It's a trap. And now I'm proofreading aloud. How's that for an intro? Just kind of like ambushed you with that, right? Because it's a trap. It's a trap. This here is another lesson in my ongoing True Game Mastery course. If you've not been following the series from the start, now's not the time to jump in. Use the course index to catch up. And now I have to link the course index. Okay, sorry. Enough friggin' combat already. Am I right? Wrong form of two. This is gonna be an error-prone one, huh? Enough friggin' combat already. Am I right? Two long-ass lessons with four lessons worth of information are too damned much. Time to cover something different, but not too different. I'm still teaching you how true game masters resolve various kinds of in-game conflicts that arise from encounters, right? Because encounters don't come in kinds, right? If you've been paying attention, today's lesson's going to be a lot easier than the last two. It's about managing the action when the player's characters encounter traps and hazards. And as with the combat crap, I've already told you how to do it. You just don't see it yet. So open up the hangar, because here comes the spoon-feeding airplane. Blundering into trouble. Welcome back, dumbasses. I wasn't kidding last time, that's what I'm calling you now. Today's lesson, how do true game masters handle the game when the player's characters blunder into traps and hazards, and when they don't? What are traps and hazards? I've been making a point of being pedantically, definitionally clear since How to Run Encounters Not. And I know you all love pedantically clear definitions. But I don't think that's always the best approach. There's a time for pedantical clarity, and there's a time to trust you know. Yeah, we retried to reread that. There's a time for pedantical clarity, and there's a time to trust you to know shit when you see it. And this is one of those times. The second one. You know what constitutes a trap. You know what constitutes a hazard, conceptually. And while I'm going to spew out a pedantical definition, know that true game masters don't spend a lot of time arguing about what lands within and without the fuzzy lines around conceptual game design definitions. This lesson's about managing the actions when the characters encounter harmful but inanimate elements of the game world. Traps are usually, but not always, crafted by sentient beings, whereas hazards usually, not always, comprise natural conditions, forces, and events. Some traps and hazards cause harm or deplete resources, whereas others create obstacles, and still others incite undesirable consequences. None of that's prescriptive, though. If you've got something your gut tells you is a trap, but that doesn't quite fit the definition, it ain't the trap that's missing something, it's the definition. The point is, traps and hazards are what you think they are. They're bad things or happenings that make life difficult, and they're usually at their worst when they go unnoticed. Sidebar, what's a resource? I recently made the mistake, twice, of trying to discuss and complement the attrition-based mechanical design of the fantasy adventure role-playing games like Dungeons & Dragons. And all I managed to do was confuse two-thirds of you and destroy what tiny shred of patience I had left for your nonsense. I also discovered some of you have no idea what constitutes a resource. Because many of you acted like certain things that absolutely definitely are resources don't count or don't have value. And since we're talking about things that deplete resources today, it's kind of important to know what that means. Anything you've got and can expend, use up, or lose is a resource. Hit points and hit dice are resources. Spell slots are resources. Money is a resource. Torches are resources. Available inventory space is a resource. Yes, empty space in a backpack is a resource. Favors owed and reputation and glory and honor are resources, even if there ain't mechanical systems in place for handling them. Time's also a resource. Both in-game time and real-life playtime are resources. And that's true even when there ain't a ticking time bomb about to blow. Game Masters Resolve, Adventure Designers Create. Just a quick reminder that this series of lessons is for game masters running games and resolving encounters. It ain't for adventure designers building games and planning encounters. That's called homebrewing, and it'll be covered later this year. Much later, because I keep discovering new things about running games you need to learn. How mere game executors think traps work. Mere game executors suck at handling traps. That might not surprise you, they're mere game executors after all. But most mere game executors actually handle most shit perfectly adequately and run reasonably okay games. But not when it comes to traps. Do you know why most players and game masters hate traps and excise them from their games? It's because even otherwise fine game masters fuck them up so bad. I search for traps. Clatter. You have detected a trap. If you open the chest, acid will spray in your face. That is not good. I disarmed the trap. Clatter. Unfortunately, you did not disarm the trap. Bother. I disarmed the trap again. Clatter. This time you have disarmed the trap. Look familiar? Most game masters, even the good ones, basically handle traps like that. And it's crap. If you don't see why it's crap, reread Dealing with Problematic Actions. It's all in there, and I ain't explaining it again. Most game masters see traps and hazards that way. Even if they dress them up with pretty prose, it's still roll to detect, now roll to disarm. And that leads them to thinking some pretty stupid things. Passive scores take the gameplay away. For example, when game masters see encounters with traps as basically two dice rolls, they can't fathom why it would be a good idea to drop 50% of the gameplay by comparing passive perception scores to static detecting difficulty classes. The idea of declaring a trap detected without a die roll really frosts their asses. No rogues means no traps. Likewise, boiling traps down to detect and disarm die rolling leaves game masters, and players, feeling like it just ain't fair to throw a trap at a party if a member ain't trained in trap disarmory. Which is fair enough. Given the trap above, if you open the chest, you get acid face. What the hell else can you do? Consequently, putting any treasure behind a trap's basically just saying, this is only for parties that bring rogues. You must be this hurt to level up. Finally, when you've got a game master with the detect and disarm die rolling mindset who also doesn't understand the nature of challenges and resources, they can't stomach it when players circumvent their hazards through clever play or blind luck. Such players haven't overcome anything and they haven't earned anything because they didn't take any risks. I ran into this shit long ago when I talked about the quicksand incident. People were all like, but if the players see the quicksand and just go around it, they haven't done anything. They're not even playing a game at that point. Get your mental shit together. Below, I'm going to tell you how to resolve encounters with traps and hazards like a true game master. But if you've got any of the above misconceptions in your head, you're going to think I'm nuts. That I'm telling you to ruin your game. So if you see yourself reflected in any of the above statements, you've got to get those misconceptions the hell out of your brain right now. Pour bleach in your ears and swirl it around if you've got to. I can't help you until you do at least that much on your own. Remember, Your job, your only friggin' job, is to tell the players what their characters see, hear, perceive, and know, and then to determine how their resultant actions turn out using your brain and whatever mechanical tools you've got handy. And nothing else. If the mechanical tools include passive scores, quit whining and use them. They're a good tool. If the players surmise something terrible is going to spray from the chest and consequently they stand behind it, reach over the lid, and open it from the back, they circumvented the trap. If they walk around the pressure plate and don't spring the trap, they did something and they deserve a prize. Hell, they deserve a bigger prize than the idiots who got blasted by the trap and managed to not die by virtue of having enough hit points. Fantasy adventure games are about spending as few resources as possible. If the players got through your death trap dungeon without a scratch, they didn't cheat, they didn't avoid the game, they won, don't be a sore loser. Know thy hazards. Given your jobs to tell the players what their characters see, hear, perceive, and know, and determine how their actions play out, you must know the world in which the game takes place. Traps and hazards ain't a thing you can abstract into stats and dice. They don't work that way. Mechanically speaking, a trap or hazard is a cause and effect thing. There's a triggering if and a terrible then. If someone opens the chest, then they are sprayed with acid. If someone steps into this space here, then a pit opens beneath them and they fall. If someone steps onto the bridge, then it collapses. If someone steps into the patch of quicksand, then they are sucked down into the earth. If someone moves within 30 feet of the crimson mold, then it drains them of hit points. Those if-then mechanical descriptors are a totally adequate way to describe a trap that goes off as designed. But they're not sufficient to handle any interactions beyond the trap going off. True game masters know what their traps and hazards look like. They know how they work. They maybe can't draw an engineering schematic. It's okay if the guts of the trap are hidden in an old... True game masters know what their traps and hazards look like. They know how they work. They maybe can't draw an engineering schematic. It's okay if the guts of the trap are hidden in a big old black box. But they can describe the interactive bits. They know roughly how the chest knows when it's opened, and they know where the acid comes from. Dungeons & Dragons and Pathfinder do expect you to know that shit. Anyone who says the detect and disarm die rolling is just following the rules needs to crack their books. The Dungeons & Dragons Dungeon Master's Guide describes narratively each trap presented on pages 120 to 123 and even includes what sabotaging many of them might look like in the world. While traps in the Pathfinder 2nd Edition Core Rulebook are given mechanical stat blocks, they're preceded with a detailed explanation of trigger mechanisms and trap effects starting on page 520. The same can be found in the original Pathfinder Core rulebooks from pages 416 to 424, and they're both cribbing off and building on the excellent trap design discussion in the Dungeon Master... And they're both, that is to say both Pathfinder books, are cribbing off and building on the excellent trap design discussion in the Dungeons & Dragons Dungeon Master's Guide version 3.5 that starts on page 67. The reason more people don't know this shit is because they skip the text, read the stat blocks, and think they know it all. Regardless, your job as a game master, is to understand your traps and hazards well enough to describe their presence and action in the world. And if the adventure you're running doesn't provide you with those details, you've got to make them up. And if you don't know how, you've got some homework to do, don't you? Sidebar: The Traps of Soulsborne. Want to see precisely the level of detail with which you must understand traps and hazards to run them? Play a Soulsborne game. Play Dark Souls or Bloodborne or Elden Ring. Because those games reward players who pay attention and play carefully. And because there's no disarm trap skill or button, they make everything you need to know visible in the environment. You can see pressure plates and tripwires and mechanical bear traps if you look carefully. You can see the holes from which spikes issue, or flame sprays or arrows shoot. And you can see the corpses, bones, and bloodstains from many traps' previous victims. And you can even see when the environment's used to camouflage a trap. How to run trap encounters. Not. Back in How to Run Encounters, Not, I said good not encounter runnery came down to two things, introducing encounters and reacting to the player's actions. No shit, right? That's all an encounter is. The characters encounter something, and then they interact with it until they're done, or until it's done with them, whatever. That there is why you have to understand your traps and hazards as elements of the world, not just game mechanics. That understanding tells you how to present the encounter and what happens when the players interact with it. The moment of awareness of a trap or hazard. Encounters happen when the player's characters become aware of something with which they might interact. And encounters with traps and hazards hang on that initial moment of awareness. It's that moment, and how you handle it, that makes or breaks a good encounter with a trap or hazard. And hopefully, it's obvious why that is. An encounter with a trap or hazard is very different depending on whether you notice it before it's been triggered or after. As such, most traps are purposely made hard to notice. Successfully introducing an encounter with a trap or hazard begins away from the table. It starts with you deciding just what the characters might become aware of and when they might become aware of it. Being aware. Let's talk for a second about what awareness really means. I kind of danced around it in How to Run Encounters, Not, and Dealing with Problematic Actions when I said that, I'm just correcting formatting. Let's talk for a second about what awareness really means. I kind of danced around it in How to Run Encounters, Not, and Dealing with Problematic Actions when I said that game masters give too damned much information away. You've got to provide sensory information on a drip feed, especially when the characters encounter a trap or hazard. Can we agree that the roll perception to see the trap and know everything about it approach is total horseshit? It's how game masters turn encounters with traps into push-button dice play crap. Encounters happen when the characters become aware of a thing they might want to interact with. That means awareness is nothing more than a suspicion that there's something worth investigating. People get suspicious and investigatory long before they have solid information. Hence, encounters with war parties across open plains begin when the party spots moving figures 1,000 yards away. At that range, it's possible to see a few people-sized figures moving around, but not to determine anything about them. And encounters with the same war parties in forests begin with the sounds of something crashing through the brush 200 feet over that way. The point is to present the party with the first significant detail they perceive and invite your players to take actions and make choices. Even if, especially if, those choices are to investigate further, to evade, or to wait and see what happens next. Sidebar. You ain't alert as you think. Modern gamers live in a world of light, steel, glass, and plastic. They have no idea how dim, dark, cluttered, textured, and uneven the fantasy adventure world is, and how hard it is to spot anything. Even a simple symbol carved into a hewn stone brick is almost impossible to spot without your nose pressed up against it, especially if the space is abandoned and the walls are covered with fungus or sediment from dripping water. Torches and lanterns don't shine like iPhone flashlights. They flicker, and they're way dimmer than any light you're used to. And medieval torches were smoky as hell. Total darkness is really, really dark. It's oppressive. Walking through an underdark cave is walking in a feeble circle of dim firelight in the middle of an utterly black void. I've had players flabbergasted at their character's failure to spot a thin tripwire in an uneven cave by torchlight. I've had fights about this. The real problem, though, is most people don't realize how crappy their own senses actually are. The real problem. Let me combine those two paragraphs. Okay, I've had players flabbergasted at their character's failure to spot a thin tripwire in an uneven cave by torchlight. I've had fights about this. The real problem is most people don't realize how crappy their own senses actually are. Your point of visual focus, the area you see in detail, is the size of your thumbnail held at arm's length. I shit you not. Everything beyond that is just your brain photoshopping the blur. Sort of. The point is, if you ain't pointing the thumbnail-sized center of your field of vision directly at something that ain't moving, it's part of the background noise. So, yeah, you can totally miss a tripwire. What might the players notice? There are basically four things that might make characters aware of a trap or hazard. That is, there are four things that might make them suspect something's lurking nearby and some care is warranted. First and second, the characters might perceive either the trigger, the pressure plate, tripwire, hidden catch, magical trigger rune, weakened wooden planks, depression in the snow, or whatever, or the delivery mechanism, the acid-spurting nozzle, the blade-shooting slot in the wall, dangling stone block, alarm-raising chimes, precariously hanging snowdrift, or whatever. Third, the characters might notice signs of danger in the environment. They might spot the bones of previous adventurers or hapless animals, scorch marks, shattered arrow bits, scratches in the floor, or shattered splinters of broken arrows, Let me try this whole paragraph again. That was kind of a disaster. Third, the characters might notice signs of danger in the environment. They might spot the bones of previous adventurers or hapless animals, scorch marks, shattered arrow bits, scratches in the floor, shattered splinters of broken arrows, the strange marks scratched into the masonry the owner cut to remind him where the trap is, or whatever. Fourth, the characters might guess or deduce that the space or thing they're investigating is the perfect place for a trap. Some shit just screams trap. Elaborate tile-patterned floors in otherwise plain dungeons, for example, suggest hidden pressure plates. Prominently displayed gem-encrusted idols on pedestals just scream trap. So too does every chest, strongbox, desk drawer, and cupboard in a kobold tinker's workshop. The point is, when you're getting ready to run an encounter with a trap, you've got to consider which elements to present and how to present them in the smallest way possible. Because the goal's to invite the characters to interact with the situation. It ain't to set off the trap in their face. The 20-foot square chamber has but one entrance, the doorway Cabe's currently standing in. The floor is tiled with irregular and uneven flagstones and covered with the dust and grime of ages. The walls are made of stacked masonry with deep seams between the blocks and no mortar. An iron-banded, lacquered oak chest sits in the exact center of the room on a square stone platform. The platform's just an inch high and only slightly larger than the chest itself. What does Cabe do, Chris? Oh yeah, this looks safe. I'm entering real slow, looking around carefully, especially on the floor in front of me. I'm moving toward the chest. Good instincts. You notice a depression in the dust and grime in the center of one of the flagstones. What does Cabe do? Depression? What do you mean? It looks like a small hollow or hole bored into the flagstone and filled with grime, so it's difficult to spot. Can I dig it out carefully with my finger? Or my belt knife? I don't want to disturb the flagstone. Cabe kneels down and works his knife into the depression. The dirt comes loose easily. There's a hole through the flagstone and into the floor below. When Cabe peers into it, he can see the sharp point of something metal, a recessed spear or spike. The kind of spike that might shoot out of the floor if the chest is disturbed or opened or something. Are there more flagstones with holes in them? Knowing what to look for, Cabe glances around. There are dozens of such bores in the flagstone in front of the chest and the stone platform and all around. The whole floor surrounding the chest, about 2 feet out, seems to have such holes. I'll show you on the map. Well, that seems excessive. Sidebar. Trap designer or game designer? This lesson ain't about designing traps. It's about describing and adjudicating them. But even so, I want to call out the conflict between world design and game design. As a trap designer living in the Dungeons & Dragons world, the best trap you can build, assuming you have the substantial resources for the massive engineering undertaking that is constructing even a simple mechanical trap, if you're a trap designer in the world, the best trap you can make is one that's totally deadly and totally invisible. Step in the wrong place, bam, dead. I know that's a gross oversimplification, and there are lots of reasons to build traps that maim, scare, warn off, or raise alarm. Just go with me. To a game designer, that's the worst trap you can ever put in a game. Instant death with no warning? Fuck that, I'm playing something else. The best trap you can put in a game is one the party detects, investigates, and circumvents through attention, insight, and clever play. Thus, adventure designers face the dilemma of constructing traps that give the players a totally fair chance to overcome them while also making sense in the world. Lots of designers forget that part. Then again, lots of game masters think the best trap is one the characters spring and almost, but not quite, die from. But that should only happen when the players fail. When might the players notice what? Knowing the signs in the world of a trap or hazard, that's the big issue, obviously. But it's also important to know when the players and their characters might notice whatever they do. To some extent, this is a game mechanics question. Every system's got rules for deciding what the characters perceive in their environment. But lots of systems are pretty friggin' loose about that, and that leads to many mere game executors describing traps and hazards yards away to player characters standing in the doorway. And that's crap. Realistically, don't read into that word choice unless you want to smack upside the gob. Realistically, characters shouldn't perceive the sorts of fine details that identify traps and hazards unless they're within a dozen feet of them. Whereas mere game executors check passive perception scores and describe entire rooms full of detail the moment the characters open a door, true game masters provide sparse details and reveal more only as the characters enter and move about the space. Or they don't. And actually, I realize now, that example that I gave of gameplay actually fits really good right after that, because it is basically showing precisely what it means as a character is moving around the space and then gradually becoming aware of a trap. Okay, good. So we just moved that. That's good. Now, when things go undetected, once again, it's normally the game mechanics that decide whether the characters notice the presence of tripwires and trigger plates and quicksand and rotted floor planks. This isn't to say attentive players can't, or shouldn't, use environmental cues to avoid stepping in dangerous spaces, whether they can see a pit trap or not. I'm just saying that bad die rolls and poor deductive reasoning can leave players clueless about the hazards around them. Since the characters can remain oblivious to the traps and hazard around them, you've got to know what happens when the characters blunder haplessly into such dangers. And that's way more situational than you might think. And it's way less game mechanical, too. How the trap works, in world and mechanically, are big factors, sure, but so are the character's relative positions and movements. In other words, knowing how the trap works in the world and knowing exactly where the characters are and what they're doing when it goes off are way, 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 way more important than knowing its stat block. If only there was some way of running your game so you always knew precisely where everyone was and what they were doing before you resolve anything. Action cue. See? These lessons are just the same shit over and over and over. The point is, you have to know the precise state of the world and the workings of the hazard when it goes off, which you can't figure out in advance. And then you've got to use that knowledge and your brain, first and foremost, and regardless of the game's rules and stats, to figure out the possible outcomes. Once you've figured that shit out, then you can use the mechanics to pick the outcome that actually happens. Because this shit's all about adjudication. Sidebar: the secret trap difficulty knob. In my last lesson on combat, I told you that telegraphing is actually a secret difficulty knob, and that telegraphing does more to tweak gameplay difficulty than any mechanical statistic. Well, the same's true of traps. The more noticeable the trap, the more likely the players will notice and investigate it. And the more they can learn by investigating it, the more likely they are to circumvent it. See where this is going? Of the four aspects of a trap that might raise the character's awareness, two are about telegraphing and foreshadowing and environmental hinting. Want to make traps easier to deal with? Lay that shit on thick. Want to make traps deadlier? Scale back on that shit. It's that easy. You know you're hitting the mark when the party correctly guesses that a trap is present and then disables or circumvents it without the rogue pulling out their anti-trap tools. Play to find out what happens. Running an encounter with a trap or hazard is no different from running an encounter with anything else. It's all about visualizing and understanding the world, describing it to the players, and then resolving their character's actions. Brain first, then dice if necessary. And that's the key to a rich, deep encounter with a trap or hazard. Remember, it doesn't matter how long the encounter lasts or how close it gets to hurting or killing the characters. It doesn't matter whether they avoid a trap completely or whether they even know how close they came to death. If the players guess there's a trap in the room and nope the hell out, that was an encounter and it was a good one. I can't stress this shit enough. Running encounters with traps and hazards is about presenting the world and inviting the players to interact with it. And that's all it's about. If you know how the trap works, to some extent anyway, you can figure out what happens in response to anything the players do or don't do. And if they cleverly hamstring the trap by identifying the kill zone and staying outside of it, or covering the dart launchers with a steel shield, they won. So be a good sport and give them the win. Even if they win by blind luck. Mechanical sabotage skills. In many games, there exist skills and abilities that allow various flavors of skullduggar to say, "I roll to make the trap not work." That shit exists, and it should. Realistically, if a trap or hazard's made of mechanical bits, a tinker should be able to untinker it. But that doesn't mean you must boil trap gameplay down to, there's a trap, roll to break it, you broke it, good job. First, you can't treat that shit like a magical get out of trap free button. It's mechanical sabotage. It can't do anything. When you prepare to run a trap, you must decide what a talented mechanic could do to screw it up. Can they jam pressure plates or cut trip wires or pry the darts from their spring-loaded channels? Is the mechanism even sabotageable without prying up the floor tiles? Will sabotaging the mechanism just set it off? Why do you have to decide this shit? Because, second, you can't expect the player to know what's possible. When your scoundrel identifies the signs of a trap, the player's going to say, "Look, I have disabled device. Can I untrap the hall?" And you need to be ready with the answer, whether it's, sure, you can jam the pressure plate so it won't move when stepped on, or no, it's not a mechanical device, it's a dirt-covered blanket stretched over a pit. I know this is going to sound bonkers to some of you, but trap disarm skills and abilities are just one way to deal with traps. They're not mandatory, they're not panaceas, they're highly specialized, and they're usually not the most efficient solution. If you can avoid triggering a trap or prevent it from hurting you, that's way more efficient than finagling its guts. That shit should be saved for the sinister traps that can't be avoided or declawed. Or when you want to deconstruct a trap and set it up somewhere else. Or when you want to temporarily bypass a trap but rig it to kill the idiots following you. Sidebar. Angry house rules. Click and whoops. And whoops. As something of a true game master myself, see how humble I am. As something of a true game master myself, there are two house rules I bring to my tables regarding traps and hazards, regardless of the system I'm running. I call them click and whoops. Under click, when a character triggers a trap or hazard, I freeze the action at the exact moment the character becomes aware they stepped wrong, usually just before something terrible happens. When a character steps on a pressure plate, for example, they feel it sink underfoot. Then they get to decide, based only on the click from underfoot, what they do next. Freeze, dive forward, jump backward, drop prone, raise their shield in front of them, what? Usually they're acting blind, but if they've been paying attention, they sometimes guess what direction or which direction what kind of hurt might come from. And I then determine the result accordingly, granting bonuses to or penalties on saving throws or bypassing them altogether. In other words, I adjudicate the action. Actually, I could write a whole article on the sort of awesome scenario design the click rule allows. Under whoops, when a character's futzing, I said futzing, around with a trap or puttering in its vicinity looking for it, there are evenish odds that a failure is going to set it off. So if you suspect there's a trap and go poking and prodding for it and fail to find it, there's a 50% chance it reveals itself anyway, in your face, when you accidentally set it off. Same's true of mechanical sabotage. If you've raised the lid of a chest just a hair and you're trying to unhook the latch inside it that'll trigger the trap, odds are even that you'll say, whoops, followed shortly thereafter by, cleric! The song remains the same. What's the key to running an encounter with a trap or hazard like a true game master? It's simple. Just run your whole game like a true game master and run encounters with traps and hazards the way you run your whole game. That's the running theme in this whole series of lessons about resolving encounters. It's just using the same core skills in every situation. In this case, it's about using those core skills to determine in advance what details, traps, and hazards are present in the world, especially their triggers and mechanisms and any environmental cues that warn of their presence. To present the smallest of those details when the player's characters should become aware of them and use those details to draw the players into further investigating. To dole out the information on a drip feed as the characters explore their environment, to track the characters' positions, actions, and movements at all time, and to adjudicate traps based on how they work and what the characters are doing. When it comes to trap disabling skills, don't treat them like magical anti-trap spray. They're mechanical sabotage skills. They're circumstantial, situational options. They're not panaceas, and they don't always work. Above all, remember that the best trap is one the players know exists and avoid through clever play or lucky guesswork. If your players bypass or declaw your traps without ever rolling dice, they're winning, not losing. Celebrate that shit. And that has been the Proofread Aloud, and I will be back next week with another Proofread Aloud. And I apologize, there will be, as I mentioned in the previous update, no supplemental Q&A on this one.